and I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source, Michael Russo. Now is the time to definitely subscribe to The Athletic. By the way, theathletic.com/straightfromthesource will get you in for 50% off. Opening night is Friday in Anaheim. And front end of back-to-back games, the Wild play the LA Kings. So if you want to read all our coverage, not just of the Minnesota Wild, but all your favorite teams throughout the league, throughout all of pro sports, we got 600 people on staff at The Athletic. Now is the time to get in and read all the stuff and do a lot of catching up for all the stuff you missed in training camp. Again, theathletic.com/straightfromthesource. My guest today, Dan Myers, wild.com. Dan Myers. Dan came back from Duluth, where the Wild had a team bonding trip. They jumped in Lake Superior. They had 20 guys in a sauna, which I don't know if that sounds like something that would be I guess it would be a good bonding experience. Yeah, definitely a team building experience.
Doesn't sound enjoyable to
no,
me at
it
all.
Doesn't. But it's probably better than when Mikko Koivu took everybody to Sauna Island in Helsinki and they spent an entire day on
like
a bunch of naked dudes out in on Sauna Island.
Sauna Island.
That's the name of it. Google it.
Well, the Finns all love their saunas. Like, they have saunas there like we have bathrooms here. Yeah. So it's Lake Superior thing, by the way, that doesn't sound appealing either. I had
jumping in Lake Superior.
Well, my wife and I went and took some pictures, actually. We just celebrated our 12th anniversary the other night. So we went up and took some pictures. Thank you very much. Some pictures because we both love the North Shore. And we took some along the beach, and I just took some Lake Superior water to kind of wet my hair down in between photo sessions, and it's cold. Like, it's cold. Just dipping my hands in the water was cold. I can't imagine jumping in probably right out of a sauna. I'd be jumping right into the sauna after that lake, because that is that's a cold lake in July, much less, you know, you get into the middle of October. Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, Labor Day 4 years ago when I left the Star Tribune and went up and took the job at The Athletic, I went up to Eric Stolhansky's cabin and his wonderful wife, Barbara, and they live right off Lake Superior, north of Duluth. And it is like, I mean, we're talking right on Lake Superior. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you can even have that anymore. And I mean, the sound of the way it is like the most relaxing place in the world. And just walking around Lake Superior on Canal Park this past week and just, you know, just sort of being there, there's just this tranquility to it. So I can see where the Wild enjoyed it, being in these cottages right on the lake and all that stuff. But the jumping into the lake thing.
No, thank you.
Right before hockey season.
I can't imagine jumping into like a normal sized lake right now in October, much less the biggest like freshwater lake in this hemisphere, I'd say. But
I was walking around like that lake too, but that Canal Park area, and some of those hotels actually have like outdoor saunas there. I mean, it's indoor saunas, but it's like these huts, like essentially right on the water.
Yep.
And it's pretty, pretty neat. They got the, you know, it's basically like you're on stage there though.
Yeah, I love Duluth. Duluth is just a fantastic place year round, but especially this time of year. And you saw driving up the North Shore, the fall colors. I thought, you know, going up there that we were maybe going to be a week or two late. We were right on time.
Yeah.
The fall colors up there right now, if you get a chance and you're listening to this, to get up there in the next couple of days, take advantage of it because it is absolutely gorgeous.
Absolutely gorgeous. I went to a golf course a little south of Duluth called Grandview. Mm-hmm. And same thing. I mean, my God. The leaves, like the scenery, it's hard to even pay attention to like what you're doing.
And you're not a big outdoorsy kind of guy, but even you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did.
So that's how you know it's good.
It was a two cigar day for me.
Are you going to be, you'll be just basically moving in at Stolhansky's place once you retire, right? That'll
pretty
be kind of your
that's the goal.
Nice quiet place to relax.
That's
you'll
the
still
goal.
Find a way to get stressed.
Well, when I went up there 4 years ago, it was a perfect time there. Like I was, you know, a lot of anxiety leaving the job. And so they invited me up like, oh, why don't you come up here and just kind of chillax.
Decompress and, a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Hung out with their dog, Coco. Love Coco.
Did you jump in the lake and did you go in the sauna?
I did not, but I hung out and and we were right on the water and it was just an awesome, awesome experience.
It sounds like an ocean. I know Marcus Foligno yesterday said it looked like an ocean, but when you get those waves rolling on the lake and they crash up. You know, you grew up on an ocean or next to an ocean.
Yep.
It looks and sounds like an ocean once those waves get going. It is just one of those perfect times of year to crack the window at night and just let the waves crash in. It is very peaceful and relaxing.
And it was interesting listening to the guys, because this is stuff that's like you almost, you know, you take it for granted that, well, last year was such a weird year for them where they were traveling and they had these strict protocols and they weren't allowed to have team dinners. And you're like, all right, well, you know, that actually is a great way to bond because all they're doing is hanging out together at the hotel. But they had these strict protocols where a lot of times they weren't even allowed to hang out in a lounge. They had to go eat in their room. And either way, I mean, an experience like this, when you're hanging out and, you know, as Marcus said, telling stories by the campfire and things like that, you have the golf outing where there's, you know, players versus staff. And there was a lot of, trash talking there as the players beat the staff, apparently.
6-5, I think, was the score on that.
And that is the absolute, that is the way for teams to come close. And, you know, I'm doing this season preview on Friday, and that's one thing that Marcus Foligno really talks a lot about in this story, is that close teams win Stanley Cups.
Yep.
And you want to do that. And that is clearly what Bill Guerin has tried to do the last couple of years, is change everything about this team, not just on the ice, but the culture inside that locker room, and make it more of a welcoming place and hand the keys over to, you know, the guys have invested to being here forever, the Erickson X and the Spurgeons and the Foligno's and the Brodeens and those players, but also some of these young guys that can come in there and feel like this is their team and they could speak up if they feel like speaking up.
Well, I know, you know, we were both kind of subjected to Zoom calls last year, but we'd been in that dressing room for enough years beforehand to kind of, I think, guess at just how the tone and tenor of it was in there. And I can't speak for you. Maybe you'll agree with this. Maybe you'll disagree with it. But just being around it again this year and being back in there, there is a different feel around this group. I think there's a looser feel. You can sense.
As Spurgeon says, there's an energy.
There's an energy and there's a different vibe. And it's, again, this isn't meant as a cheap shot at 11-20. And, you know, they're leaders, they're veterans. But you can tell that there's just a difference in how the current leadership core leads. There's a different vibe to it. There's a younger vibe to it. And I'm the same exact age as Suter and Parisi. I mean, my birthday's right in the middle of both of them. And so I see how they lead because it's, you know, we come, obviously, very different backgrounds, but we come at it from kind of a similar age perspective. And you see how guys like Foligno, but specifically Dumba and Brodeen and Erickson Ek, these younger kids just have a different leadership style. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's permeated really throughout the whole room. And it'll be kind of an interesting dynamic to see grow here as the season gets going.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And it's, you know, the one thing I will say to when we always talk stuff like this is that they haven't lost a game yet, right? So that energy could disappear
in two days.
I mean, that's just the way it is. Yep. Everything's loose in training camp. The key now for them is to get out of vacation mode. And that is what Marcus Foligno talked about after practice yesterday, is that the entire league is playing right now.
Yep.
The Wild still don't play till Friday. And so while, you know, no team had a bonding trip yesterday. The Wild did the last two
days. That was strange, yeah. You know, coming home from, you know, you came home yesterday as well. This is being recorded here on, what is it, Wednesday today?
Yep.
Gosh, and my days are all turned around. But you know, it was strange coming back yesterday from Duluth and then a couple hours later turning on the TV and, oh, well, here's a regular season game. We're going to watch the banner unveiling and, you know, watch Seattle drop the puck on its first season. And it is strange, you know, sitting here, gosh, having to think about, gosh, what day is it? You know, is it Wednesday? And, oh, we're flying to California tomorrow. And then the season gets started and it's back-to-back games. Yeah. And then that is going to be a challenge, I think, for this team is, you know, I can't speak for sure. I wasn't at the actual bonding trip, but I imagine a few cold beverages were consumed by at least a few of the guys on the team. And well, they certainly sweated it out yesterday, but day off today, you know, they're going to have to work to really get into that game mode, like you said.
And even yesterday's practice was not really structure. And tomorrow is going to be a quick practice. So they haven't had a real quality practice before from from Sunday to Friday.
And it's back to back games this weekend.
Exactly.
So it's going to be a challenge.
And they're playing a team in Anaheim that's already going to have a game under their belt. So the Wild are going to have to quickly wake up on Friday and realize.
A team in Los Angeles, too, that's a big, heavy team that's a very structured team. It's going to be a difficult road trip. It's going to be one of those things where I think if you can go out and find a way to get 2 points here on this road trip, that'd be a solid start before coming home and playing a Winnipeg team that we haven't seen in quite a while. It'll be fun to see the Winnipeg Jets again because a very skilled team, very talented team, and one of those rivals that it'll be really fun. Yeah. It was fun seeing them play Chicago again. It was so strange seeing that Blackhawks jersey back in XL Energy Center and going back to the United Center last week. It's one of my favorite buildings.
Blackhawks are going to be an interesting team, Dan. I got a lot of questions on Twitter asking us for our central look. And it is,
I really
first
like
of all, we're going to see Winnipeg and Scheifele, by the way, perfect timing. His suspension will be off the book. He'll be ready to go.
How that works.
Yeah, I know. But Chicago, I mean, you look at that team. I mean, they got Taves back, who against the Wild looked like Jonathan Taves. We know Patrick Kane. We know DeBrincat. He's probably going to have a big year. Tyler Johnson's there. They reinvented their blue line. They got the Vezina Trophy winner from last year. This Chicago team is a team that can really make some noise.
I'll say this, and I hate to admit it because he's on your fantasy hockey team, but do people really know a lot about Alex DeBrincat? Because I think he's really underappreciated. I didn't realize this last year. He finished third in the league in goals last year, on a team that was, middle of the pack, I think, in a very hard division. But, watching that first line at the United Center the other night with DeBrincat, Kane, and Tyler Johnson, size is not their strength, but there is a ton of speed, a ton of skill, and Patrick Kane and Alex DeBrincat looked like they were in midseason form just in terms of their chemistry and being able to find each other on the ice. Tyler Johnson, has a chance, I think, to have a kind of a career resurgence if that line sticks together.
Those two,
and then that pushes Jonathan Taves down to the second line. That pushes Kirby Dach down to the third line. And all of a sudden, that's a team down the middle. Championship teams are built down the middle. You got the Vezina Trophy winner back there, a blue line that's young and improving and is very different looking than it was, from the dynasty years of yesteryear. I love what Chicago did in the offseason. I think they're going to be a really good team. I think in terms of the Central Colorado, I think we agree is the clear favorite. Arizona is probably the clear bottom team. I think Nashville's kind of on that bottom team, but Chicago, Minnesota, Winnipeg, Dallas, St. Louis, you could almost draw any of these teams out of a hat and make a case for them to finish in those 2-3 spots. And you'd think with the way the Pacific is, there's a good chance that we'll see 2 wild cards out of the Central as well.
I agree with you there. I mean, you got to think Vegas is a guarantee, obviously, in that division. It's going to be interesting to see Edmonton. You got 1-2 there. Smith coming off a great, great year. And do they have the depth now in Edmonton that could help lead them and complement the Dreisaitls and the McDavids?
But Aldo Nova's Evan Bouchard on the blue line back there. We like that.
Yep, no doubt. But then you got Calgary. Markstrom, I got to think, is going to bounce back a bit. You got Vancouver, who's Besser I see is practicing today.
And Ekman Larson to that blue line.
And Demko is a rising star in net.
Yep.
Anaheim and San Jose might struggle off the hop this year, but they're going to eventually be, at least Anaheim, I think, are going to build themselves up. LA is the interesting team because they're in this like rebuild mode, but then they go out and they add guys like, Deneau and Arvidsson. And so they're not just rebuilding.
I like Arvidsson.
Yeah.
And it was too bad to see what happened to Quentin Byfield in the preseason, because you want to talk about teams down the middle with Kopitar, Deneau, Byfield. Mm-hmm. They have a glut of centers, and I'm with you on Anaheim. I think they're going to struggle early in the year, but a lot of young talent in Anaheim too. It'll be interesting to see. I think when you want to talk about the Jack Eichel sweepstakes and how that progresses, it'll be an interesting storyline to follow early in the year. Anaheim seems like one of those teams that if they want to make a move, they may be the best positioned of all of them because they have the cap space. They have a number of high-end prospects that I'm sure Buffalo would be interested in. That seems like a prime destination. What kind of procedure Eichel ends up having, how quickly he can get back. Anaheim is a team, I think, like you said, may struggle early, but one way or another, they're going to be a team that's going to be a lot better, I think, the second half of the year than they are
and
right
I
now.
And I don't know. I think Bob Murray's contract situation is in flux, so he could be in that, like, all right, I got to make a big, bold move. And you're right. I mean, they've got so many prospects there where I just don't know if LA works. And, you know, Vegas, I think Peyton Krebs would have to be in the deal if it was Vegas, because they obviously need help up the middle, but I don't know how you make the financials work there.
Well, you'd have to look at probably what Riley Smith's in a contract year. He's making, what, $5 million or so. But I mean, like you said, that's Riley Smith isn't going to move the needle much, I wouldn't think.
I mean, you have Stone and Pacioretty. They're signed forever there. You know, I just don't know how you make the math. Petrangelo, obviously.
Somehow, Mike, they always find a way to wiggle in and make these moves. Yeah. It's one of those teams with Kelly McCrimmon, you can never count out Vegas because he somehow works that magic and they find a way in. If you'd have told me a couple of years ago, they'd have been the destination for Petrangelo in free agency, I would have said no way. But
Calgary is another team that's going to be interesting because Goudreau is also in a contract year, and I don't know if they're going to bring him back. And so, you know, maybe you make the move there because they want to get better up the middle. It'll be interesting. The one team that we could assume is still out is Minnesota. And frankly, after watching them in training camp and seeing how good some of these kids can be, Boldy, Beckman, Rossi, and then the kids coming, the Kuznadinovs, and some of these kids in college, too, are really good.
Wonder if that played a factor in, you know, because I know going into camp, the belief was that Minnesota's probably still on the periphery of it.
Right.
But, you know, I think you'd reported that Minnesota's out now. Yes. And you have to wonder if getting a look at these guys in camp and assuming you'd have to, you know, include a Boldy or a Rossi along with some picks and established players that make a lot of money. You know, is the juice worth the squeeze at that point when you look at, okay, well, Adam Beckman is, you know, maybe a little closer than we thought. Matt Boldy is a little closer than maybe we thought. Marco Rossi looks like a guy that could contribute at some point this year. Who's Nadinov? I mean, gosh, it's a nightly highlight reel, it seems, on Twitter every time, you know. Maybe you look at that and you reevaluate and you go, well, Eichel's not going to be a factor for most of this season anyway. Maybe you want to hang on to that depth, see what happens, because as we know, starting next year and especially 2 and 3 years from now, they're going to need some of that cheap young talent to be big parts of this core.
And that to me is the biggest risk in getting Eichel too, is that you're trading all, like, let's just say this year's a wash. Now he's got 4 years left on your deal and you're going to trade multiple first round picks and top prospects and get rid of $8-9 million worth of salary and probably another trade. Then what do you have? And you only have him for 4 years and you're just trading a couple 20-year-old. Like, it just makes very little sense to me sense.
The other thing too, that I think you have to remember is, you know, is this team one Jack Eichel away from being a Stanley Cup contender?
Well, not if you get rid of everybody else, too.
No, and that's the thing. Like, if you could, you know, if the salary were a little different on this team, if it were structured differently, if you didn't have to worry about, you know, $12-14 million the next 3 years, if you had more room right now where you could bring in Eichel and still keep Kaprizov, Fiala, you know, obviously you're not moving Kaprizov for him, but keep a Fiala and a Dumba and all this other talent around, I think it maybe be different. If you were just moving only futures, if you had that flexibility like in Anaheim, but you're not. And you're going to be playing essentially kind of with one hand tied behind your back from a salary perspective. As we've said, you need the Beckmans and the Boldys and the Rossies and the Kuznetsovs. You need those guys to not only be players on this team, but to be impactful players 2 and 3 years from now if you want to be a contender. And I think they can be. And you know, the Wild certainly needs them to be if they want to get to where they're going.
And the other thing with Arrows too is that you are getting a guy that needs to have surgery. So it's not even that if you count this year as a wash, you don't know what he's going to return like. I mean, he's going to be off the ice for a long time. Is he the same player? I don't want to say damaged goods because Jack Eichel is an all-world player, but you get what I'm saying. Yep. It's a huge risk. And again, it'd be different if you could throw the Fialas into the trade. But if you're Buffalo, why you know, as good a player as Fiala is, Fiala's got 1 year left on his deal and then another year before UFA. Why would Kevin Fiala re-sign in Buffalo? Not just that they're they've been a perennial loser, but the way they're treating a player right now, like, I don't think they're going to be a destination. Not that they were a destination before, but I can't imagine they're going to be a big destination now for any NHL free agent for a long time, the way that Jack Eichel has been treated here. So same thing. It's like, you know, we always say it's got to be, we're assuming, and when I say where, I'm mostly talking me, because Dan obviously, you know, works for the team and things like that. But I've always assumed now, when you look at the Wild salary structure, that when they make trades here to free up money in the next couple of years, it's going to have to be Dumba, Greenway, and or Fiala, you know, probably two or three of those guys. And that's not going to happen in that trade. And so now you're putting him in another trade. It just, it makes no sense. And again, what I'm saying is that Buffalo just, I can't imagine they're going to want somebody without a lot of term left in a deal that has a lot of money, because they've got to make sure that they're going to re-sign that player if you're giving up an asset like Eichel.
Well, I agree with your, with the names you toss out, I think are the logical ones, but you know, a big part of that for the Wild is going to be, how does Adam Beckman turn out? How does Marco Rossi? How does Matt Boldy? How do all these guys turn out? Because, you know, you hope, and they certainly look like Beckman and Boldy, for example. Two left wingers look like they're going to be very good young players, but there isn't a spot for them right now. So, I mean, not only are you going to have to bring them up, you're going to have to free up spots. And so I think those are the logical contenders. But you're spot on, and it'll be certainly interesting to see how this all turns out. I think, you know, some of the long-term ramifications with Eichel, and like you said, with just how they're choosing to do business, and that's their choice. That's their option. But, you know, when you think about Buffalo, nothing against the city of Buffalo. I enjoy the city of Buffalo when we're there, the 1 or 2 days a year we're there, it's fine. Not a destination place like a Southern California or New York City or Chicago, a place like that. You know, they struggle, I think, enough just to get headliner free agents. But then when you see how they're treating, you know, maybe their biggest star they've had there in a long, long time, that's not going
to
help.
And absolutely. And players are starting to talk about, we saw Robin Leonard in probably a way that he now regrets doing it, but publicly putting this message out a week ago about the way that they're treating Jack Eichel. I had Marcus Foligno on my podcast a couple of weeks ago as well, and he respects Eichel really well. Also says that the perception that he's a bad guy is absolutely misreported as well. I don't know Eichel really at all, but that's from a former teammate of his and somebody that respects. And I think we could all agree that if Marcus Foligno likes you, it probably means that you're a good dude, because Marcus
pretty good judge of character.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be interesting. And to get back to the money issue with the Wild, and the reason why I bring those three guys out of the hat is that, look, the Wild have $15.5 million worth of cap space going into next season. And, you know, with the first year of the real big dead money of Parisi and Suter, and yet Goligoskin is going to probably get extended. Fiala's got 1 year left on his deal. Greenway's got 1 year left on his deal. Kakken's got 1 year left on his deal. Nico Sturm is a pending unrestricted free agent. Those pegs don't all fit. And so those guys, we know that at a couple of those guys are probably moving.
Did you mention Talbot in that list?
Talbot at least got 1 year left.
He's got 1 year left. Yeah. But that decision is coming down faster, the pipe. Yeah. And the number one goalie, and you know, I think clearly they hope Jesper Wallstedt's the number one guy, I think, for the future. But is he going to be the number one guy in 2 years?
No.
He certainly can't count on that.
Yeah.
He could be here and be a part of the equation and the solution, but number one goalies don't come cheap, and that's going to be something this team's going to have to worry about 2 years from now.
Absolutely. Let's take a quick break, and I'll be right back with Dan Myers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So Dan, let's talk about this team a little bit. First line, Eriksson Ek playing with Kaprizov and Zuccarello. I went into training camp excited to see what that looked like. But had my doubts on whether or not he would fit just based on the type of player he is, not exactly a playmaker or all that stuff. And also wondered, you know, how long would Dean Evason go before he says, you know, I'm going to go back to the comfort of knowing that Foligno and Greenway and Erickson Ek were so good the last year and year and a half. But so far in camp, they, and by the way, Dean has also echoed that, where Dean said that he was curious to see if Erickson Ek was going to change his way that he's played it. So far, we haven't seen it. Training camp's training camp. Exhibition games are exhibition games. The proof will be in the pudding once the regular season begins. But right now, it does look like Erickson Ek has not changed the way that he has played on that line, which I think is the most important thing. If Erickson Ek started to be on that line and said, I got to give Kirill the puck every second, I got to give Zuccarello, or, you know, I'm as talented as Kirill and Zuc, I can make all sorts of fancy plays and start to change what is his bread and butter, which is driving the net, net front, going to the dirty areas, being an absolute ass to play against. You know, that would be a problem if he had changed that. But we have seen him play the same style and complement those two now. Do you think that it will work in the regular season? And have you been even surprised that Erickson Ek so far looks like that will fit?
One of my favorite developments so far of training camp has been the kind of the behind the scenes sniping at Erickson Ek from guys like Foligno now that Erickson Ek has signed his long-term contract, making fun of his haircut, as you said, kind of being an ass to play against. I was intrigued going into camp because I was wondering kind of the same thing. Is he going to change his style of play, try to become more of a playmaker, more of a distributor, which is something we haven't really seen from him? I'm sure he has that in his game. I mean, he was a very talented player coming out of Sweden. He's a first-round draft pick. He's posted points. He had a great year last year. And then I kind of wondered, well, how is, if he doesn't change his game, how is that going to mesh with the playmaking chemistry that Zuccarello and Kaprizov have? And it actually, now that I've seen it, and again, it's preseason, it's practice, but now that I've seen it, it actually works really well. I think Dean Evason mentioned to me, it was last week, Erickson Ek's tendency is to go right to the front of the net, which is good because it, you know, he can provide a little bit of screen, he can provide some traffic in front. But what it also does is it actually opens up more ice, you know, on top of the face-off circles, you know, between the hash marks and the blue line. It opens up more ice for guys like Kaprizov and Zuccarello to sort of work their magic and move the puck a little bit more and involve the defenseman a little bit more. And it works out really, really well. I'll be interested to see if that trend continues. And a big part of that equation, too, is, like you said, that Erickson Ek, Foligno, Greenway line worked out so well last year. Where we're going to see a dip going from Erickson Ek to Hartman, and preseason and training camp so far, Hartman looks like a natural in that spot. And I think they have options beyond Hartman if he were to get hurt or if there was an effectiveness. I think Nico Sturm would be a guy that could easily very naturally move up and play sort of that Erickson Ek type role.
Or so, Freddie Gaudreau.
Or then Freddie Gaudreau.
Nico up to the Fiala line.
For that matter, one of the things I would really like to see at some point this season, I don't know if we will, is I'd like to see a little more run from Nico Sturm. I was really impressed with the way he played last year. I thought he took advantage of you know, the limited opportunities that he had. I don't remember, what do you have, 10 goals or 11 goals
in 10 and a half minutes of ice time?
I mean, that's, you know, that's pretty darn good. Now, is he going to go score 30 goals being in a top six role? No. Does he belong in a top six role? No. But I think if he were to play second or third line minutes in a pinch, he could be a guy who could score 15 to 20 goals for this team. But going back to the initial question, Erickson Ek providing some of that grit, the ability to maybe provide a screen, bang home a rebound. I'm going to be really interested to see how Zuccarello finds a way to get him involved in front of the net. Because, you know, Zuccarello, with the way he sees the game and the way he's able to get the puck to Kaprizov, he has something in mind in how he wants to get Erickson Ek involved, and I think he could be sitting on a really good year.
Exactly, and that is what I hope from Kirill and Zuccarello, is it can't be a two-man game and just have Erickson Ek go to the net, because Eriksson scored 19 goals in 50 something games last year, and it wasn't just scoring
no
off
rebounds.
And yeah, and it wasn't just scoring off rebounds and deflections. He was sniping pucks.
Yep.
And so he deserves that ability, and hopefully he remembers that he could take that shot too. You don't always have to pass it off, and that is going to be the biggest thing. But I loved like that one preseason game where they let I can't remember who made the head man pass out, but all of a sudden Zuccarello and Kaprizov wound up in the right corner of the rink at home digging the puck out, and the puck wound up out on Jonas Brodin's stick off a great pass by Kaprizov. And where was Eriksson Ek? Just at the net. And then I wound up rewinding the replay, and when those guys flew into the zone to go get the puck, Eriksson Ek beelined to the net.
Yep.
So that is exactly what they want from him.
But I think Eriksson Ek's speed in between those two as well is going to offer more opportunities off the rush maybe for that group than if you had a guy like Victor Rask in there who with all due respect to his game, you know, speed isn't really his MO. You know, he can, you know, play with the puck a little bit, but Eriksson Ek is one of the faster guys on this team. And I think having that speed, it could really help push the pace for those two with him.
Speaking of speed, Rem Pitlick, I was talking to Rem yesterday in the bottom of Amsoil Arena, and, you know, super nice guy. And he is in a position where I think he can make an impact on this team. I don't think he's going to be in the opening night lineup. I think that, you know, Dean has pointed out that it is really tough for this kid. He's claimed off waivers. He has literally won practice. Then they go to Chicago, play the game. You know, he's all the system work thrown at him. And then what happens the next day, they get back on Sunday and Victor Rask is back on that line. And so you wonder if they're just putting Victor there. You know, you're the veteran. You're playing opening night.
Yep.
Rem, hold, you know, bide your time for a little bit. Maybe you play him in the second of a back-to-back. You know, you just mentioned Victor's legs. Maybe that's a way to really run these two is for now, you know, you play Victor on the one game, but, you know, second of a back-to-back where he might not be as effective, you throw Rem in there to debut, make his wild debut on Saturday night in LA, and then maybe Rem could get some traction and wind up in the lineup. The other option is Brandon Duhay made the team. Maybe you play Brandon against rugged guys and maybe against rugged teams like LA, but maybe more skilled teams. That's when you throw Rem Pitlick in there, because I think Rem, they got him to play him. The question is, where is it going to be? I still think that Rem Pitlick could be a lifeline in a lot of ways for Kevin Fiala, who needs a skilled guy in that line. I mean, Victor is skilled, but sometimes he can't keep up, or he's not ready for that pass that Kevin, because he flies so far into the zone. And Freddie right now, so far, has not shown to me that he's got any offensive ability whatsoever. He has 5 regular season goals since he scored 3 in the Stanley Cup final in 2017. So and he's just being handed the ability to play with Kevin Fiala in power play time. So, you know, I think that Rem could be somebody that could help complement Kevin, because he could keep up with Kevin. And that speed and that skill could help Kevin. It'll be interesting to see if they go with that route at some point.
Well, and you know, I mean, skill players like Kevin Fiala see the game a certain way. And if you're not as skilled as a guy like Kevin Fiala, and there aren't very many guys on this team that are, you see the game and you play the game very differently. Rem Pitlick is certainly not as established as Kevin Fiala, but he's an offensive guy, and you'd think he sees the game and plays the game the same way Fiala does. And just watching Kevin Fiala in the preseason, I don't know if you've noticed this, he's playing pissed right now.
Like, yeah, it is so
Bill
obvious.
Bill Guerin said when they signed him to the one-year deal that he hopes that he, you know, comes in and is motivated and kind of proves him wrong. And I think Kevin Fiala is doing that right now. He's been really, really impressive in all facets. I mean, he's been killing penalties and stuff in the preseason. He's actually looked really good killing penalties. He had a really active stick the other night in Chicago, for example. Like, I was kind of one of the few moments where I was really paying close attention after about the midway point of the game, where I think everyone stopped paying attention. But he looks like he could be sitting on a really, really good year. And if they can find someone, whether it's Rask, whether it's Gaudreau, whether it's Pitlick, whether it's Duhame, eventually, whether it's Beckman or Boldy or Rossi, to kind of complement him and find a way to just get the puck to him in scoring areas, he looks like a guy that is certainly motivated. And that's what Billy Guerin wanted when they agreed to that 1-year extension here over the summer.
100%. And, you know, I do hope that he's not overall pissed, because even off the ice at times, like yesterday off the ice, just he didn't seem very happy when he was just walking around the bowels of Amstel Arena.
He's one of those guys that he walks a very distinct line. And yeah. Dean Evason has said this in the past. Like, you need him to play on that edge.
Yeah.
He's at his best when he's playing on that edge, but he's also gotten himself into trouble when he goes a half step too far. And we saw it, was it last year, where he got the 3-game suspension for the hit from behind, where
yeah.
he took a half step too far
yeah.
and then he was out yeah. for 3 games.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if he takes a half step too far, yeah. you know, in an offensive fashion, he maybe turns the puck over and it's a 2-on-1 and ends yeah. up going the yeah. other way. So he has to play that yeah. line very carefully.
And that line, I think, has a tendency to be crossed in large part because I think he sometimes feels like he has to do everything alone on his line. And he's coming off a frustrated playoff series where he had tons of chances, but not a lot of production. Obviously, I preface that, you know, the caveat to that is Game 6, he was outstanding and got them to a Game 7, yep. essentially. But he tons of chances. Like, he should have, you know, he should have had 10 goals in the playoff series. He just wound up producing in Game 6. And what a little concerning to me is that we're seeing that again now in the preseason, where he's getting these chances, and you're like, wow, this is great. But then at the end of the night, you're looking and you're like, well, he didn't score, and he only created in this situation, you know, and not with even strength with his line mates. So that's going to be something to pay attention to this year, because as we know, Zuccarello and Kaprizov are not leaving each other's side. So who is going to be, you know, on that left side? The other thing to me that's going to be curious to watch is how it does feel like Freddie Goudreau has just been not penciled in, penned into that line. He started there. He hasn't left there, despite the fact that he hasn't produced yet. Now, he might. We haven't seen the best of him, I'm sure. But, you know, when do you make that maybe move? Do you know, putting a Nico Sturm there or calling up a Rossi or something to give this guy.
Maybe you put Victor Rask there.
Yeah, or you're exactly right. Yep. You know, it's just going to be Rem Pitlick has played center before.
The interesting part for me with Fiala in terms of how the overall depth of this team is going to affect that is, you know, the Kaprizov line is going to get the attention of every opponent's top checking line.
Right.
And you would think that the Foligno line, you know, with Hartman and Greenway, Dean's going to try and deploy them against the other team's best offensive line, which now puts Kevin Fiala and whoever he's playing with in a position where he's probably going against another team's third or fourth line.
Mm-hmm.
So the chances are going to be there. He's going to get opportunities to score. It's going to be a matter of him walking that line and finding guys, as we've said, we've listed all of them, finding guys that can play with him to help supplement some of those scoring chances and create those scoring chances. Because from a matchup standpoint, Kevin Fiala is going to get opportunities against lesser players. There's no question about that, I don't think. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of whether he can find a way to capitalize on these opportunities. And if he can, the Wild's going to be a much deeper team and a much better team because of it.
Yeah. Let's go to blue line now. Goligoski and Spurgeon look like they could be really good together. Goligoski, the Brian Suter replacement there, plays the game a different way, though. He plays the game like in a faster way. Where Ryan, I've said this before, Ryan, and I think he's a fabulous defenseman, but see, he sometimes almost dictates the pace of a hockey game.
Yep.
Because he slows things down. He's almost like that quarterback that drops back into the pocket.
Very, you know, methodical.
Yeah, methodical. And the Wild want to play fast, fast, fast. And because he used to get 30 minutes a night, it really dictated a lot of the way the style of the team plays. Because even when he's not off the ice, you're sort of catching up on your next rotations, mm-hmm. right? Where Goligoski plays, more of a fast style. Spurgeon says he's super easy to play with. Offensively, I think I think Ryan Suter makes one of the best first passes in the NHL. He can headman pucks. He's got that type of vision. Goligoski is a bit of a different type of player, but he can move the puck. He's poised, and he plays pretty robotic as well.
I think that's another interesting one for me to watch over the course of the season. I think, with all due respect to the game Ryan Suter brings, and you just talked about it, I agree 100%. A world-class defenseman in his own right, for sure. I think changing that up could be maybe the best thing that happens for Jared Spurgeon. Mm-hmm. I think he could just be you know, those two have looked great. I think he could be, you know, sitting on a really nice year offensively. You think he'll probably get maybe a little more run on the power play than he has in years past. But a guy who, you know, for a long time was someone you could count on to score 10 to 13 goals from the back end, Spurgeon. And this was, you know, 3-4 years ago, but I think he has that ability in him. Goligoski is a guy who could probably score 10 goals this year. It's funny with Ryan Suter, you could always count on, you could probably pick, 7 to 8 goals and about 48 points.
Yeah.
Like that was what he did every single year, and you could count on it. But I think there were defensive areas of his game that were starting to manifest a little bit, where I think Jared Spurgeon, especially the last year or two, has had to backtrack more and sort of cover up some of those lapses. Why? I don't know. I think ever since he had that foot injury in Dallas, I mean, the foot speed has not been there. It's not to say he's not still a very good player. He is. But I think Spurgeon's had to cover up some of those weaknesses the last couple of years, especially. Alex Goligoski doesn't have that problem. He's getting up and down the ice very easily. So I think Jared Spurgeon, without having to worry as much about that, we may see a guy that we saw 4 or 5 years ago before we saw some of those speed issues with Suter come up. Jonas Brodin is a guy who I'm really eager to watch this year. Was fantastic last year. It scored 9 goals. I think the Wild had always believed he had sort of this offensive ability, but had never tapped into it. And he was able to do that last year. And I'll be curious to see if he gets any more time on the power play and how those offensive numbers, if he's able to build on those moving into this year. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Dumba is the one I want to see too. Will he be better? I don't think he had there were times last year where he was erratic, but good. And I think he wants to be more of an offensive threat. Might be difficult if he's going to be on that second power play unit as opposed to the first. I'm always surprised that he's not the guy on that first one.
We saw that from Matt Dumba, that 32-game stretch a couple of years ago, you know, in the pandemic shortened season where, you know, he was on a Norris-type pace through 32 games. You're talking about a guy who was on pace to score like 35 goals. And that doesn't happen very often, a defenseman doing that. Now, was that pace unsustainable? Probably.
Yeah.
But at the very least, he was looking to score 20 to 25 goals. And so you
know
it's there.
That was pre-pandemic, right?
That was December of 2019 that he got hurt, right?
Yep.
It seems like 5 years ago now.
Yeah.
But so we've seen it over not just a 5 or 10 game stretch, but a 32-game stretch. And you know it's there, and you saw it almost coming in the years before that. And he just hasn't been able to recapture that for one reason or another, whether it was coming back in the bubble and still not being 100%. You know, another weird off season, and then last year a shortened year. So it'll be interesting to see with an 82-game year, more of a still not a traditional off season, but more of a traditional off season, if he can be that guy that more closely resembles the guy who scored 12 goals in 32 games a couple years ago. 12 goals,
and that was actually the year before the pandemic.
That's
in 2018, December 2018.
Everything is all
pandemic was short in Anaheim when I guaranteed to everybody that the NHL would never play in front of empty buildings.
Yeah, well, that I've told you this story, but
I want that podcast to be like removed Wednesday, from the Athletic archives.
That Wednesday, so the world as we all know it shut down on a Wednesday night is when the NBA canceled its season. The Wild was scheduled to play the Vegas Golden Knights that Thursday at the X. That game got canceled. We practiced at TRIA that Wednesday, and Kevin Gorg and Anthony LaPanta and myself were there Wednesday morning.
Just to interrupt you, when Dan says we, remember he works for the team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like well, no, I was saying we, like us scribes, we're all sitting there, and Gorg and LaPanta were huddled, and we were talking about this, you know, COVID thing, and it's starting to, you know, start rearing its ugly head. And this is Wednesday morning, and we're talking like, gosh, by the end of the month, we might be playing in front of empty buildings. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
By the end of the month. Well, that night, like 12 hours later, the world is shutting down. The next day, that Wednesday, it was insane. I'll never forget this as long as I live, especially being in the media. And I'm sure you remember this, how quickly the news cycle was moving that Wednesday. Yeah. I mean, it went from, you know, we're at 11 o'clock. By the, you know, 14 days from now, we might be playing in front of empty buildings, to 12 hours later, the NBA is shutting down.
Yeah.
And by the next day, the whole sports world had shut down.
I did a podcast that night on my other podcast with Suhan over at a restaurant in Savage. And I think Savage and Shakopee Savage area. Yep. And we wrap up the podcast, and that's when the notification came out at like 6 or 7 o'clock that the NBA had shut down. So I'm driving home and the phone rings and a player called me, who's no longer on this team.
Now, I bet I know who it is.
Yeah. Who now plays for the Islanders. He called me. He's like, what is going on? And I'm like, I think that tomorrow you're not playing against the Vegas Golden Knights. He goes, yeah, I don't see how. Like, because you just knew that the NHL was going to follow suit with the NBA, right? Everything that happened with, who was the guy on the Oklahoma Thunder? Or was it Utah Jazz?
It was Rudy Gobert, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy who was like touching everyone's digital recorders.
I mean, they had just played like 3 straight games in NHL buildings. I think Jersey... maybe Brooklyn or Jersey, like definitely Detroit, because Carolina was just in their locker room, and you just knew that the NHL was going to follow suit. And that morning, I mean, we got the immediately don't show up at the morning skate. We'll find out a decision on this. And you just knew that they were going to suspend the season. I was thinking like, holy crap, 4 days before we're in Anaheim, and I'm guaranteeing, I'm basically like Googling what COVID-19 even is. I mean, that's a little exaggeration, but remember when we were in San Jose and we went to the Barracuda game a couple days before, there was that the Santa Clara Health Department came out and said that we're recommending that the Minnesota Wild and San Jose Sharks don't play tonight. It was because it was that day.
I remember,
I emailed somebody from the league. I said, hey, this is being recommended by the public health department out here in San Jose. And he wrote me back in a second. He goes, well, we're not canceling the game.
That was the first time where I think for us, that's where it really hit home. Definitely. Was okay. Yep. This, because it was always, when we get into the zone of when we're in hockey mode, you might hear about the news and it's kind of just buzzing going on. But that's where it brought it full circle, where it's like, oh, okay, this is actually real here. And even then, less than a week, that was, I think, 5 days before the season shut down. There was no way we could have imagined what was coming for us, and not just us, but society 5 days later. And, the Masters is shutting down and golf is shutting down and, auto racing and soccer. I mean, everything shut down. It was insane.
Yeah. I mean, and remember, the league, what they were trying to do to react on the fly, the dumb, stupid
keeping
stuff
the
they were trying
to do. The
best part was keeping the media out of the dressing room and having the players after the game come into the hallway
where there's a thousand people.
There's a thousand people that they don't even know. I remember we're interviewing, was it Jared Spurgeon or Fiala? Oh, it was Fiala. Fiala had this monster game in Anaheim where he scores the overtime winner, the last goal of that season for the Wild. And they pull Fiala out into the hallway, and we're interviewing him closer than we ever would have been in the locker room, because we had to sandwich ourselves up until Fiala's face, because there are equipment guys going around with the stuff. But the best one was Fiala being almost pushed by a janitor with a mop, here's a guy in his sweats, and it's like you couldn't have been less socially distanced. And I'm just like, this is insane. And it was all for optics, and the league just doing stuff on the fly with no medical advice. And it was
the early days of COVID, the wild west of COVID.
But remember the early days of COVID, I still got like 5,000 gloves in my pantry over there, because remember you had to walk everywhere with gloves.
Well, you're still going through all the toilet paper here that you hoarded last March.
Yeah, I do. I have like 1,000 1,000
veered
containers
way off the track here, but we could do a podcast just about that whole week.
I know.
I mean, we were in California. I remember, and this will be the last thing, I swear, but we walked into the Honda Center for that last game, and we walk in the doors, and I look to the right, and there's the Ottawa Senators bags just stacked all the way up to the ceiling. And I didn't think twice of it, but they were kind of shadowing us up the West Coast. Yeah. They were in San Jose, LA, Anaheim the same time we were just kind of flipping around. Well, a week after the whole league shuts down, Ottawa has a COVID outbreak.
Yep.
And Colorado may have had one too, but then you get to think, it's like, gosh, we were just in all the same buildings. We're just trading places with Ottawa up and down the West Coast for the last week.
I think their last game was in San Jose, if I remember correctly.
It was just crazy. It's one of those things that
I'm still convinced the Wild and the Blues got the mumps in Anaheim, because that's where, remember, that's where we were when they, all of a sudden both teams the first time had the mumps. They stayed at the same hotels.
From Anaheim, and Ottawa's getting COVID from Anaheim, then I'm sure it'll be really fun going to Anaheim here. To I know
that, yeah, the Ducks weren't very happy that I hypothesized where
you are a medical expert.
I am. So it was a good distraction to keep from talking about the third pair.
Oh, no, come on.
So third pair is the concern of the team to me. And look, I talked to Billy Guerin today, actually, and Billy, poo-pooing the idea that this is a concern, because I asked him point blank, like, last year, you recognized very early on that you had a problem at 6D, and you went out after game one the next day and acquired Ian Cole. So will you kind of same thing monitor that this year? And if all of a sudden you feel like a Kulikov slash Merrill slash Ben third pair is not getting it done, would you go out and try to make that move? Go out, acquire either a defenseman or buy time for Kalen Addison, or call up, we keep on hearing from Dean Evason that they feel they got, 9, 10, 11 guys in the system that could play NHL games. So you got 4 or 5 guys down in Iowa that you can, that they think that they could play NHL games. The Mermises, the Lizots, is Hicketts a D?
Joe Hicketts,
Yep.
One of the nicest guys in the world, by the way.
Who am I forgetting too? Mermis, Addison, Hicketts, Lizot. There's one other D that Dean always lumps in with those guys.
Sounds about right to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're getting beyond that, then it's getting awfully thin. But I mean,
I feel like there's somebody obvious that I'm not thinking of.
Ultimately, what happened on the first day of free agency is unfortunate, because I think there was an interest on the Wild's end. I'm not probably breaking any news here in bringing Ian Cole back. Billy's long loved Ian Cole. And, I think Ian Cole would have loved to have been back, but just with what the Wild prioritized on that day.
I bet you if Nick Foligno said no 2 hours earlier, Ian Cole would be on the Wild.
I can't say I disagree. And that probably would change the entire look of the blue line, because now you're putting that $2 million plus dollars into Ian Cole. And, what does that do with Kulikov? It probably changes the arithmetic all the way around. And of course, Seattle taking Carson Soucy and the expansion draft was sort of out of the Wild's control there. So I was impressed with Kulikov during the preseason and the exhibition season. And I had asked Dean about that last week. He showed a little bit more offensive punch than I was expecting watching him. And we saw him get, because it was preseason, he was able to get a little bit of power play time where he was able to show some of that offensive skill. Now, I don't think he's going to be playing much power play this year, but at least he has it. The real question is going to be, what's next to Kulikov? And whether it's John Merrill, whether it's Jordy Benn, I swear I'm going to say Jamie Benn like 20 times this year, or Kalen Addison down the line. That's going to be, I think, the big thing for the Wild. And the good news is they have a couple guys back there in Merrill and Benn. If one guy's playing well, you can just sort of ride the hot hand. If one guy's struggling, you can maybe take him out of the lineup. Or if they're both playing well, then you have a nice competition there between vets and two guys that are sort of used to being in that position. So I don't think there's going to be any hurt feelings if a guy's, in an extended stretch where he's the seventh D-man. And I think Kalen Addison, I was really impressed with some of the work he did in the exhibition season. Got a taste last year. You have to think he's going to go down to Iowa and have a really good start with the amount of minutes and the situations he's going to be playing in. So competition is good. I mean, that's what is going to drive this whole thing, is that guys are going to have to be motivated to play. Yep. And if everyone's healthy, there's veteran guys, there's experienced guys back there, but there's no doubt a guy like Jordy Benn, struggled the last couple of games of the preseason. He's going to have to be better. But, I mean, he's a veteran. I mean, I need to see it in the regular season first before I'm going to really get too concerned about how a guy, especially a guy with 500 games in the league, played in a couple of late exhibition games.
I think that if it's true that Billy, like Rossi and Beckman, wants Addison to play down there for a while just based on his age, although, again, Addison is older and has more professional hockey experience, I think that the only real remedy if these guys struggle would be a trade, and it'll be just interesting because the other guy, by the way, as Kevin Kuzman was the one I was thinking of. He's only played 15 NHL games.
Churchman.
Okay,
another one of the nicest guys in the world, and I think a big part of this too.
And
with
he,
Addison,
by the way, is 15 NHL games too since 2013-14.
One of
so
the
he's
big
not
things
exactly
with Addison too is, you know, that timeline might get expedited if the Wild power play comes out and looks like it did last season. And Dean Evason's looking for some sort of spark on the back end. Mm-hmm. He may have no choice if Addison's down in Iowa playing well. You know, maybe that's the first switch you try and make. Yeah. But I agree. Ultimately, the best thing for Addison is to play big minutes down in Iowa and let him kind of mature down there.
And the power play, I will say, like, if the number one unit for some reason is in a blip, to me, you throw Dumba on there, put Spurgeon on with on the second unit. You got Brodin, you got Goligoski. I mean, right now, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of options.
Yeah, and right now, one of Goligoski or Brodin is not going to be on the power play, or they're going to be rotating every game.
Well, Goligoski's been a staple on power plays in Arizona.
That's why. To me, like, still Brodin might be the guy that gets kind of the short shrift, but we'll see. Anything else that we haven't gotten to yet?
You want to talk about our weight loss? How skinny we
really
both are?
You look skinnier than me. I look
no.
Like you do. You look
I've
at you.
Got man boobs still. We're working on that.
You're different. You're a different human being than you were last time we did a podcast.
I feel like a different human. We're all, you know, the last time we did a podcast going back to the pandemic was from California.
Yeah.
We're all different human beings since then.
Have we talked about Duhem? I don't think we haven't. Yeah, I'm happy for the kid. First of all, he's from Florida.
Yeah,
most important
course.
Thing. But no, look, it's very clear that they came into camp expecting him to make the team because he was the guy for four straight days that was on that Sturm Bukestad line to start training camp.
Yep.
Remember the other guys that got looks there? It was like one practice and they were off. This guy, and they always went back to it. But he could fly. And this is what I've been a broken record almost begging the Wild for years. Like, why are you always going out and signing, you know, third and fourth liners to 3-year deals at $2-2.5 million when you can, this is where you can elevate guys and promote guys and throw guys a bone. This is what Iowa's supposed to be for. It doesn't always have to be for the top prospects like Boldy, Beckman, and Rossi. You know, the goal is to get the Bittens here, the Drews here, the Doers here, the, you know, the Mason Shaws here, and here Duhem comes. And what I liked what Billy Guerin said the other day is that there's, you know, Duhem might have, there's certain guys that just, you've in the AHL, you're going to hit that peak of what you could be as an AHL player, where guys sometimes come to the NHL and are much better players at this level than they are down there. And Duhem really could be that one. Like, they should not just pigeonhole him as being a fourth line left wing. He is somebody that can clearly, he's got the speed, the physicality, and the hands to play up in the lineup. So I really think that we're going to be talking about Brandon Duhem being an impactful player over time in this lineup.
Well, and the size too. I mean, he's, you know, you talk about his speed. He's probably one of the two or three fastest guys on this team, straight line speed. And he's not, you know, Kevin Fiala would be in that mix, but Kevin Fiala's what, 5'10 5'11 Brandon Duhem's 6'1 210. I mean, he's got good size. I know, you know, Billy loves him. Someone who showed off some of that offensive skill too was it in the Blues game.
Yeah,
came flying down the left wing and, you know, picked a corner, and I couldn't have been more impressed with what I saw from him. And I'm not really surprised, because I remember talking to Chuck Fletcher, two GMs ago, for a prospect story I was doing, and his name came up, and Chuck loved him. And this is the exact sort of role that he saw Duhem one day fitting into, was sort of the third, fourth line, you know, speedy left wing, finishes his checks, kills penalties, does all this stuff. I know Paul Fenton really liked him. I know Billy loves him. I mean, you get three different sets of eyes that come in here and say the exact same thing about a guy. At some point, you have to, you know, believe it. And we've seen it really for the first time this year throughout camp and practice. Couldn't have been more impressed with just the way he plays. And a guy, by the way, too, not afraid to drop the mitts. We saw him have two fights. And I know talking to Joe O'Donnell, who's watched him the last 2 years in Iowa, a guy that's not a shrinking violet when it comes to defending teammates. He's been stepping up and defending Marcus Foligno. I'm really excited to see what this kid can do. It's another one of these options that we've talked about, that you start him on the fourth line, but you can move him up. He's got a little bit of skill. He's got speed. He's got size. He does a little bit of everything, and a guy who I think is going to carve out a nice role. And we've talked too about, you know, in the next 2 or 3 years, how much we need, you know, or the Wild needs guys like Boldy and Beckman and Rossi. They're also going to need guys like Duhame and Dewar and Giroux and Bitten, these guys to fill these third and fourth line roles. If you can do that, it's going to create more flexibility and more opportunity to spend some of that money at the places where you really, really need it.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's going to be interesting to see how good he is, impactful. I like that it seems like he has a good head on his shoulders as well. Like,
very mature.
Yeah,
he's a rookie, but he's about 24, 25 years old.
He sat in front of us in that presser after making the team, there was not somebody that thought that looked like a guy that felt like the journey was over, right? He made it very clear, like, I know I could be in Iowa tomorrow. He was not taking it for granted. He just wants to keep on moving forward. And a great story. I mean, this is a guy that I mean, it's from South Florida, right? I mean, his best friend is Jacob Chychrun. Chychrun sent me a photo yesterday after my story ran, that I'll eventually use. But it's this awesome photo from 2003 where 2003, let me do some quick math. When was he born, Duhame?
He's Chychrun. 24.
Yep.
So that's 97 or so.
18 years ago. No. Was it 2003? That can't be.
2003 was a great year. It's the year I graduated from high school.
I don't think that. So no, 97. So 2003. I guess they could be six in this picture. I'll show you the picture after, and you could tell me if this looks like a 6 year old. Yeah, I guess these guys are six. Definitely. All right. Yeah, I thought they were older in this picture, but they're holding these trophies at Incredible Ice, where I used to cover the Panthers. They're a practice facility down there. And second from the left is a little blonde-headed Jacob Chychrun. Second,
who
from
has turned into an incredible player, by the way.
And second from the left, wait till Brandon Duhame. I'm sure he's seen this picture, but second from the left on the back is Brandon Duhame, and he is tiny, and he's just holding this picture. It's pretty cool. Far left in the photo, Trevor Duhame, coach Trevor Duhame, Brandon's dad. Far right of the photo, Jeff Chychrun, coach Chychrun. Jacob Chychrun's dad.
Pretty good. Yeah, I enjoyed your story that you wrote on Duhame a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. So this will be a cool story to write eventually.
It's always fun to cheer for these guys, you know, from afar that come from sort of these unusual backgrounds. And as you know, you covered hockey in the state of Florida back in the 90s. How far a state like that has come, and how far, you know, states like California, and we see Austin Matthews, you know, coming from Arizona. It's only going to make the sport better. And, you know, Jason Zucker coming from Nevada. It's only going to make this sport better, you know, as we kind of diversify and see these guys coming in. And each one of these guys has a really cool story. And I'm partial to a guy like Brandon Duhame because he's a college player. And I love watching these guys come up and have the success. But a guy who's mature, 24 years old, rookie, 2 years of pro experience. He'll be a fun one to watch develop over the course of the season.
So here's a quote from Jacob Chychrun. He goes, I'm super happy to see Dewey made the Wild. He goes, to see his hard work pay off is really special. He's so deserving and earned this opportunity to play in the NHL. I'm really proud of him. Pretty good comment from Jacob Chychrun, who's going to be a superstar defenseman in the league.
You know, one of the things that I think the league, I don't know how much time you want this to go, but one of the things that I'm starting to see with the league is a guy like Brandon Duhame. You know, he wasn't a top six guy when he was at Providence College. Now, he had that ability, but he was playing in a third line role. And the reason I bring this up is because the team I follow closely, Minnesota State, had a guy named Walker Dewar last year who played fourth line. He was a fourth liner at Minnesota State. He's a very good fourth liner. And he signed with Calgary, and he was in Calgary's camp until very, very late. And it's interesting to see. We talk about these guys, you know, Ryan Carter being a perfect example of a guy who had to adapt his game from how he was a scorer in college and a skilled guy in college to having to carve out a fourth line role just to stick in the league. And you see guys like Brandon Duhame or Walker Dewar who played these roles already in college. And that transition, I think, is a lot easier when you've done it for 3 or 4 years in college, and now you just keep kind of that same mentality going to the pro game. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of that in years to come, where, you know, some of these franchises start looking at some of these third or fourth line guys in college, but they have particular skill sets. With Walker Dewar and with Brandon Duhame, it's their speed size combination, their ability to kill penalties. to see if they'll get maybe more opportunity to play professional hockey here in North America than maybe we would have seen collegiate third or fourth liners a decade ago get.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good valid point. And because, you know, the one thing about NHL players is that if you reach this level, you scored somewhere, right? Yep. I mean, Stefan Vaiu was 115-point scorer at Val d'Or.
But he had to adapt his game to stick.
And he wound up having a really successful career. And, you know, now we're starting to see more guys. That, I mean, Brandon Duhem didn't even kill in college, which is just crazy to me.
A guy that did, by the way, if you look at his statistical numbers, everywhere he's gone, he's gotten better every single year, which I think is another thing to look at, too, with his development going forward. He's gotten better everywhere he's gone, and he's going to continue to develop here, I think.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, like a guy like Rem Pitlick, who's scored everywhere he's been, can he bring that to the NHL level in the role, or will he have to actually adapt, or does he have the body to adapt? Like, you can't ask him to play.
And some of these guys, it's, do you have the desire to adapt? I mean, let's be honest. There's ego there. You know, if you're a guy that scored 25 goals in college, or, you know, scored 100 points in juniors, do you want to have to, you know, be a guy that has to, you know, kill penalties or drop the mitts or, you know, play 8 minutes a night? You know, it's not easy to do. And that's why I think we're going to see more guys that come from that background that aren't going to have to change or adapt their games much, but they have a certain skill set. We're going to see those guys, I think, more opportunities in the future.
It makes sense. So with the Olympic teams coming up, you know, sometimes we always say, all right, you're going to have these fourth liners that are actually superstars in the league. Maybe it actually is smarter to put a Ryan Hartman on the fourth line in the Olympics rather than, you know, like a star, you know, player on another team, but he has no chance of playing in that top three role. So you got to put him in there, you know.
Well, how much did you just look at that game last night, Lightning Penguins, the season opener? How much did they talk about? I think John Cooper, you know, has talked about this too, is how much they missed that third line. As good as that Tampa team is,
they lost
their entire third line. And you look at championship teams from the past several years, almost, you know, to a man, these teams have a third or fourth line identity that is strong. You know, guys that play out their entry level contracts on the cheap, and then they end up going somewhere and getting a bigger role elsewhere. Brandon Duhem can be that kind of guy, I think. Someone who can really carve out, you know, kind of that third or fourth line niche, be someone who's really hard to play against. And if Minnesota can cultivate a couple of those guys now over the next couple of years, they could have, you know, similar success in terms of having that kind of heart and soul third or fourth line that kills penalties, you know, that are staples on Stanley Cup winning teams nowadays.
Right.
You have to with the salary cap. There's no choice.
Well, Dan, thanks for coming over and doing this podcast. I feel bad. I absolutely forgot that I asked for Twitter questions, and maybe I'll use some of those Twitter questions in my other podcast. And I completely forgot to go through Twitter and ask you a bunch of these.
But pick one right now. Let's do one.
So, well, here's one that that you and I have discussed. That is the first one I saw. Any chance the Wild go after Carson Soucy with him not playing in Seattle? I mean, it makes a lot of sense. They have the cap space, but it's one game.
Yeah,
like, they're trying to figure out their blue line. Soucy, if you dig into Soucy's numbers last year, he had an unbelievable year.
So good. And that was a
you can't tell me
underrated
that,
loss.
Yeah, for you the can't Wild. Tell me that Soucy is not one of the top six defensemen.
It's amazing to think about the guys, and I know plus minus is a flawed statistic, especially over a game or two, but when you look at it over a 56 game sample size, it pretty much evens out. The Wild's third pair last year led this team in plus minus. It's almost unheard of. Is it not?
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're
very rarely do you see those guys, you know, a good third pair. Usually you might get like plus five, plus six. These guys were like plus 22 in a 56 game season. They were really good. And it's going to be hard to replace. That's another thing too. When you talk about that third pair, they're stepping into some pretty big skates, but I'm with you that Seattle's going to mix and match on that blue line. They have so many different guys back there. It's going to be a strength of that team. He's going to get a shot there eventually. And I wouldn't be surprised one bit if, you know, once he gets into the lineup, he doesn't come back out.
Daniel asks, who gets the first call up this season and why? If it's up front, I bet Beckman.
I agree. I think he earned it in training camp.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I think Boldy would have been in that position had he not been unfortunately injured. But
yeah.
I think the Wild caught a break. I think Matt Boldy caught a break too. That looked ugly. That could have been some sort of high ankle sprain that could have lingered all year long.
I thought it was going to be bad.
Anything else good?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them, but there's so many, and it's hard.
Well, you know, maybe
the way Twitter is now, too, you can't.
Well, and you're so popular on Twitter.
Well, no, but they, like, things just aren't, like, you know, the whole show more stuff, and they sort of are out of order now. I don't get, like, the new update on Twitter.
Well, now you can use them all for your next meaty mailbag.
This was a good podcast, Dan Myers. Enjoy your flight on the team charter.
And you enjoy yours as well. It'd be nice to get in the Southern California sun.
It will be. Maybe I'll see you in Newport Beach tomorrow night. We'll see.
Probably.
Yeah, thanks for everybody for listening to Straight from the Source. And let's take one more quick break. Lots of podcasts this week on The Athletic. Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner of the NHL, is with Craig Custance and Sean Gentile this week on The Athletic Hockey Show. Rob Pizzo from CBC Sports and Jesse Granger and Sarah Sivian have the debut episode of The Athletic Hockey Show Wednesday this week at The Athletic. And thanks for listening to Straight from the Source. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to leave a rating and review. Subscribe to The Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. Start with a 30-day free trial, then just 99 cents per month after that. And right now, all annual subscriptions to The Athletic are 50% off when you visit theathletic.com/straightfromthesource. Thanks, everybody.